yum nub. Eat out the yum nub. The tomato chicken.
Hello and welcome to Yubcast, your Star Wars cartoon podcast. My name's Jamie, and hey, when I show off, it's instructive and inspiring.
And my name is Matt, and that lightsaber belongs to me. That's my delivery of that line.
Yeah.
Like a stand-up comedian from the 70s.
Yeah.
What's your line from?
It's from Anakin. It's from Clone Wars. Believe it's he was talking to Mace Windu. I think it's the episode where Boba Fett tries to kill Anakin.
Yeah, I remember it now. Yeah, it's coming back to me. No, I'm not singing a Celine Dion song, but it's coming back to me. Mine was Kylo Ren yelling at Finn.
Yeah. Yeah. I always wondered, we talked about it before. Does he know that that's Anakin's lightsaber, or he's just like, sees a lightsaber, was like, oh, that belongs to me. I should own that.
I'm a monopoly on lightsabers. Come down to Kylo Ren's lightsaber emporium. Yeah. I assumed it was because he seems very steeped in the legend of his own family.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he went and found the helmet and worships it, talks to it, and it talks back sometimes. I think he's very steeped in the lore of his family, so he knows who it is. I was just sort of thinking back on that movie. Well, we should probably tell everyone what we're doing before we get sidetracked. You want to tell everybody what we're doing today?
Yes, we're recording an episode of Yubcast, your Star Wars cartoon podcast.
There you go.
But
get podcast fuel for this. Like this.
I assume that's some sort of caffeine drink.
Yes, I'm getting caffeinated. What's the opposite of caffeine? Alcohol? Yeah. This says this is a IPA from a local brewery. Not one I helped make though. So.
And I assume you're putting it into some sort of funnel.
Yeah. I can't drink anymore, so I've got the
you gotta do the butt chugging.
I've gotta butt chug this one. God damn it.
A while ago, like some like there's like news like of like this these assholes at Old Miss being super racist, and apparently that's just a thing.
At Old Miss, it doesn't
track. At Old Miss. But this kid has been like doxxed and shit, and I won't say whether that's good or bad, but it just reminds me of like there's some kid who like he almost died from like butt chugging or something. This is years ago, and they had to like like got this family lawyer who's like he has to explain what butt chugging is and that the student didn't do this, or it's either he did it or he made like a pledge do it. And it's just like just thinking about like the lawyer has to like end with a straight face talk about butt chugging, this super fancy lawyer.
I lived in a house near our old university for a long time. This house was occupied by graduate students for like 10 years, and it was just a rotating line of them. And I was an undergrad, but I was living there with a couple graduate students. And the owner of the house decided to sell it because the housing market was heating up and he could cash in big time. And so they tell us, like, you're out. You're the last people to get to live in this house. You have to clean it up. It had been continuously occupied by college kids for over a decade. So we had to clean this pit out. We're cleaning out the bathroom, and I found a bottle, like a 22-ounce bottle of, like, a stone Russian Imperial Stout under the sink in the bathroom. And you remember my friend John?
Yeah.
Shit, I hope he doesn't listen to the pod. I was like, what? What's that?
I was gonna say, doesn't he like a respectable job at a university?
Yeah. We're not gonna let anyone track him down. He's like the chair of a department of a university someplace. Anyway,
I remember. I was gonna say, I remember when he got like thrown down some stairs because he was drunk at a bar.
Yeah, that was a bar. The bouncer got so pissed at us, threw John down a flight of stairs.
And then I think another friend of ours dislocated his shoulder getting him into a cab.
I forgot about that night. Shit. Anyway, we're cleaning up the bathroom. We found this huge bottle of beer under the sink, and I'm like, "What the fuck is this in the bathroom?" And John said, "Sometimes you can't drink anymore, but you're not done."
Wow.
It was a joke. It wasn't his. It was just a joke, but it was so fucking funny. I couldn't stop laughing. Oh, I've thought about that in 20 years.
Think about it. These are the minds that are coming up with like research for
he's brilliant
various health things. They're all fucking wasted and locking people in refrigeration units and or just at least their stuff or their underwear or
oh yeah, my girlfriend's locked me in the walk-in as a joke. Oh. It was just that's just a regular prank. She had a lot worse to me, so wow. I got off track quite fast.
Well, this is for anybody new listening, this is Yubcast. We just getting sidetracked is the business.
Alright, I'll do it. So today it's episode 113 of Yubcast. I said we can put in the episode numbers because we know them now. We're covering season 3, episode 13 of Bad Batch, Into the Breach. But we'll get to that in a minute. Today's May 5th, 2024. Did you do anything Star Wars this week? Especially considering it is the unofficial Star Wars holiday, May 4th, yesterday.
Here's some money. Go see a Star Wars.
I was at a scouting event in the morning, but afterwards you sent me that message, so I watched the Acolyte trailer a few times, and that was pretty rad. I was going to watch it anyways because I'm hopelessly addicted to Star Wars, but now I'm actually pretty excited about it just because the very end was just like, holy shit. Very, very sinister looking dark side user / possible Sith at the end. Then watched Tales of the Empire later that night, and then watched episode 4 with the family.
Yeah, I was really excited when you sent me the screenshot of you watching episode 4. Made me want to do it, but we have family in town this weekend, and so we got a little sidetracked from Star Wars stuff. But I did. One, I watched the Acolyte trailer because I texted you after. I'm with you. I was on board with Acolyte, but this trailer reveals the plot a little bit. The last trailer was basically a teaser. We covered it in a previous episode. We're probably not going to cover this trailer unless we need to. Maybe we can do it one of the weeks coming up. But it comes out in almost exactly a month from today. So I'm very excited for this show. And then since it's May 4th, they released Tales of the Empire, which is the Morgan Elsbeth and Barriss Offee arcs. I don't want to talk about that too much other than to say that I watched it because we're going to cover it once we're done with Bad Batch.
Yeah.
The same way we did the Dooku and the Ahsoka episodes for Tales of the Jedi. Go ahead.
Yeah, I should also say that we're recording this on May 5th, Cinco de Mayo, and the finale of Bad Batch happened last Wednesday. Oh,
yes. So technically there is no more Bad Batch coming out, but we still have 2 weeks after this week to finish up our coverage of Bad Batch. And then we usually do a wrap-up show too. You and I haven't discussed that yet, though. So, yes, Bad Batch is over. We'll also cover that in a show, but pretty satisfying ending, honestly.
Yes, I agree.
All right, so the only other thing I did is I sort of got a wild. Well, I guess there's two things. I sort of got frustrated with myself this week, and I started working on R2-D2's computer, like it's a microprocessor, and Arduino and server boards, like just getting them all wired up properly and figuring out the power supply and everything. And so I just sort of locked myself in the basement for a couple hours for the past couple of days and decided I'm going to get R2 up on his feet and rolling by the end of the month. I think I have everything except for a couple small parts for all the electronics now. So I can at least get bare bones electronics installed, and where I don't have the servos yet, I can just like have the wires tied off. Mm-hmm. And wait for me to install the servo. So I'm all in on R2. And then on May 4th, there is a charity fundraiser ball for the local art gallery that we are members of. And so we are small business was a sponsor of this event because they get all the local businesses to sponsor it, and it was Star Wars themed. And so I went dressed as, I wore a suit, but I wore my Mandalorian helmet, and I walked around with Grogu in my laptop bag, peeking out all night. Sideshow Grogu. So I won the Grogu contest.
So do you have like a urinal like named after you or your business? So like whenever anybody uses that urinal or the toilet, they can see the name of your business?
Based on how much I donated, it would be the little splash thing that's put in the urinal.
the little plastic thing that holds the cake.
Yeah, the little plastic thing that holds the cake down that prevents the piss from splashing back on you too bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, that thing has my little laboratories logo on it. That's what I would spend the money on if I were them. But no, it's just the local. People call it prom. People dress up, and this year it was Star Wars themed. It was pretty cool. I offered them a bunch of props to put in there, like life-size Yodas and things for photo ops. And they decided against it because they also auction everything off at the end to raise money. So they'll have like a bunch of artists make Star Wars art. In their various mediums, like some people did wood carvings and some people did like murals and like screen printing and t-shirts, like that sort of thing. And all of that was basically donated to this art gallery, and then the art gallery auctions everything off at the end of the night. And so they declined having any of my props there because they said it would be confusing to people. They would think they would be allowed to buy them. They also didn't want to be liable if they got broken. So
yeah,
I was like,
to be like, all right. I'll sue your ass.
I mean, people got fucking drunk. Like, people were wildly drunk at this thing because it coincided. They messed up a little bit because in our community, there's also a vine crawl where people go house to house drinking wine once a year. Mm-hmm. And they accidentally put those events on the same night. And so people started going house to house like 4 p.m. Like all of these middle-aged people. There's like the first house is like 4:30, and then the second house is like 5:30, and the second house has like a huge potluck where everyone brings food. And then every hour they basically switch to another house. And there's two different routes you can walk. But this party didn't start until 8. And so the majority of people wandered around the neighborhood drinking wine for 4 hours and then showed up to an open bar party at this art gallery. I was not in a mood to drink, so I was probably the second most sober person there by the end of the night. Sorry, I keep cutting you off.
No, I was to say, I wish I must be nice about living in like a small community like yours, that they have things like that. Something like that would never fly where I live. Partially because the population's exploded, and there's a lot of people I don't like, and probably wouldn't like me, and a lot of just general assholes. But that just sounds nice.
Yeah, so there's two events a year. There's a vine crawl, happens usually around this time. And then there's a hops hop. And the hops hop is the same concept, except it's house to house. And instead of wine, you get beer. So I always do the hops hop because I have access to unlimited beer. So my house is usually a stop on hops hop. We talked about it on the podcast once because... 1 year at Hops Hop, I had an Irish band in my backyard. My friend's Irish band was playing music. That usually happens around Halloween, Hops Hop. And so the Irish band was there playing, and someone called the cops and showed up, and the cops showed up to break up our party, our Hops Hop party, which is a community event, sanctioned community event. The problem was that the cops showed up, his wife and kids were in the house, and his best friend is the drummer for the Irish band. And so he showed up, and I was like, hey, Sean, what's up? And he's like, someone called and complained about the party. And I was like, oh, that sucks. And he's like, yep, I don't see any problem here. And then he hugged the drummer, said hi to his wife and kids, and then left. Also an advantage of living in a quote-unquote small town.
Yeah. My folks live in a small town, but it's not that kind of fun small town. It's the kind where you go to a local bar thinking you're just going to hang out, have a few drinks, and talk with the bartender because nobody's around there, and then he just starts throwing the N-word around because...
Yikes.
And I'm just like, I'm going to get another drink, and then like he's just like, blah, 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 Obama, and it's just like, and then like my money is just going right back into my wallet. It's like, and my wife and I are, let's get out of here.
Yikes.
Yeah.
Try that in a small town.
Yeah, you'll be welcomed.
All right. Yeah, so we've got a lot of cool stuff coming up with the Upcast. So we've got two more episodes to cover Bad Batch, then we're going to hit Tales of the Empire, a couple episodes there. But other than that, I played some Star Wars with the kids. We might go see The Phantom Menace. We haven't done that. I know that was it's 25th anniversary and it's in theaters, but we just couldn't swing it with all of the crap happening this weekend and people being in town. But I think it's in theaters in my area until Thursday. So I might just like grab the kids one night and take them out, see the movie. I like watching. We watched Return of the Jedi in theaters recently with the boys. So it might be fun.
That would be kind of fun to see, even though it's kind of like not. I mean, it's not one of my favorites, but you know, it'd be nice to see in the theater again.
I think I'm the type of person where that would work really well because I would be transported back to 1999, honestly.
So yeah.
I definitely want to do it. I might just do it, even if the kids don't want to go. I might just do it this week.
Yeah, back when, you know, like you saw it and you're like, wow, this is great. And then like on the ride home, you're like, wait a second.
Yeah, I won't be doing that because I'll know what happens this time. Yeah. Eyes wide open.
Yeah.
All right. Is there anything else we should talk about today?
No. Well, this sucks. I'm going to be in Salt Lake City, so I'm going to probably miss my chance to go see it.
There are theaters in Salt Lake City.
Yeah, but I'm attending a work thing, so I'll probably be like doing that sort of stuff all night.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, it's a Phantom Menace, so you don't need to see it again.
Yes. That Darth Maul character seems interesting. He's the new villain of the trilogy. Wow. Okay. Shall we get into actually show content? Or?
Yeah. There's one other thing I did do. I ordered, pre-ordered Star Wars Outlaws for the Xbox.
Cool. I'm definitely interested in that game.
It's open world, which you like in a video game. And both boys actually, have been playing Jedi Survivor like nonstop for the past like couple of weeks. And I've just been enjoying watching them play it. And I was like, yeah, let's watch the trailer for Outlaw and the gameplay trailer. It was like a 10-minute gameplay segment out. And the boy was really excited about it. He's like, oh, this looks awesome. I'm like, yeah, it really does. It looks very cinematic, looks very fun. And so I just bought it. It's not available until August, I think late August, but we have it now. So I'm really excited to play that game with them.
Yeah, Jedi Survivor was great. I had to have a Orbest translator just like on my phone right next to me, especially in the first levels where you're in Coruscant and there's just advertisements for everything. So like my Orbesh isn't great, so I'd have to rely on like some of it to the translator to figure out some of it, but the amount of the effort put in just to make everything look just like a big like humongous city with like all sorts of neon signs and stuff, that's just great.
All right, should we tell everybody our new segment? Do you want to do the new segment?
Sure, yeah. So we've decided that in order to cut down on some time and get some other Star Wars stuff under our belt, is that we're just going to do a quick review of the Forces of Destiny before we get to the main episodes. The Forces of Destiny, who, for those of you who don't know, were just these tiny little shorts put out by Disney, starting, I guess, probably 2017. It was pretty much all around the female characters of Star Wars. Am I right in that?
Yeah, they definitely started that way. I think there's a few exceptions, but I think the purpose of it was sort of the Women in Star Wars movement had started around that time, where people were showcasing female characters and creators.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, you're correct that definitely like 95% of them are exclusively about the female characters.
Yeah.
But
yeah, is when Star Wars went woke.
Yeah. Well, there you go. I'm just checking them, but they're all just a few minutes long. They're all available on Disney Plus, I believe. Mm-hmm. And there were a few seasons, two seasons.
Yeah. It took me a little bit to find it. Just go under Star Wars and then find shorts, because it's not going to be under the animated series.
Yeah. So I just ran down the list, and there are a couple that are called like Porgs and are about Chewie and the Porgs. And then there's one called The Path Ahead in season two about Luke and Yoda. But yeah, basically I think the original intent was to showcase female characters. So out of the 32 episodes released, maybe two or three of them aren't focused on the female characters, but they're cute little shorts. They're canon. They're inside the Disney continuity. This isn't something we'll do every week, but we can do it when we think we have time to fit it in. So do you want to start us out?
The choices we make, the actions we take, moments, both big and small, shape us into forces of destiny.
Yeah, okay. So this one is called The Sands of Jakku. Original air date was July 3rd, 2017. So Rey and BB-8 are walking through the desert. So this is set during episode 7, probably right after Rey finds BB-8. Rey says that until someone comes back for BB-8, he can stay with her. She stops suddenly, and they're being followed by a Night Watcher worm that apparently feeds on junk. Now, the White Watcher worm is something that they showed in episode 7. It was this set of eyes that just popped up out of the sand, and that's pretty much all you see of it.
Yeah.
So this pair of eyes is like a periscope. It lowers back down to the sand. Rey orders BB-8 to run, and they take off running. Rey says it probably hasn't eaten today, and they have to find something to feed it. She instructs BB-8 to follow her. The Night Watcher worm pops up in front of Rey, and she jams her staff into the mouth, propping it up. It's slobbering on her as she struggles with it. They turn and run away. Rey says they're almost home. The worm spits out the staff, and Rey catches it. This is pretty cool. Very Jedi-esque. They lose sight of the worm. Rey stops while BB-8 keeps rolling. The Night Watcher worm pops up from the sand, grabbing BB-8, swallowing him, and then going back under the sand. Rey yells out, but BB-8 is gone. Rey looks around the desert and throws her staff like a spear, hitting the worm in the head just below the sand. The worm emerges from the sand and spits BB-8 out. Rey and BB-8 make it on top of her AT-AT walker home. The worm is sad that it can't eat BB-8, but Ray throws it a piece of trash, and it leaves. Ray turns to BB-8 and tells him that they are safe for now. BB-8 is covered in drool. He shakes it off. Ray says that BB-8 is lucky she found him.
The end.
The end. Yeah.
Yeah. Like I said, these are short. But yeah, you placed it in the continuity correctly. We should probably preface all of these with where they are in the continuity order. This is apparently immediately after she takes BB-8 from Tebow. Tito?
Mm-hmm. Tito.
Tito. Yeah, the member of the Jackson 5.
Yeah.
The University of Florida football player. So I was reading sort of the continuity stuff about this little short. First thing is, talk about the power of Disney. Daisy Ridley plays Rey in this.
Mm-hmm.
She and Lupita Nyong'o are the only credited actors in this, because Maz Kanata is sort of the one that introduces all of the episodes. Like, she's like the theme song. And mm-hmm. I'll have put the theme song in here to mark where we start the review. But the whole thing about this episode in Wikipedia is that it's supposed to be forecasting that she has like special abilities. So her catching her staff, like you said, is a cool move because it showcases that she's got this awareness. And then her being able to hit the sandworm under the sand, or the Night Watcher worm under the sand, also showcases that she's got some insight. These are short, so there's not going to be a whole lot we can talk about, but this is, like you said, the sand or the Night Watcher worm appears first in episode 7, just as the pair of eyes, but this one, in this short, we get to see the whole body. So I thought maybe we could talk about that design. Like, what did you think about this worm?
I thought it was all right. Not my favorite, but I'm not gonna lose sleep over not liking it. It served its purpose.
Yeah. So there's some production stuff about the design of this worm. Dave Filoni's and Ghostbot Studios were the producers of these Forces of Destiny episodes. And they wanted to base the worm on a microscopic image of a tardigrade. You know what a tardigrade is? It's the
water bear.
Yeah.
Yeah. If a woman is shrunk down to microscopic size, what would she rather be, with a water bear or or a shrunk down man?
Or Martin Short in a submarine.
Yeah. No. Don't you mean Dennis Quaid?
Yeah, Dennis Quaid and submarine, sorry. They're inside Morton Short, aren't they?
Yes.
God damn it. Fuck, I haven't seen that movie in forever. I blew it. Did I have to fight, like, a seaman in that movie? Or was it, like, a fever dream? Might be an episode of Futurama.
That... I don't think that happened.
Let me go to the Wikipedia page for inner space and make it canon. Anyway, so they wanted it to be reminiscent of like a tardigrade or a water bear, and they had designs from Ralph McQuarrie and Terrell Wittelatsch, concept designs for the 1984 Dune movie and the sandworms used in that movie, and they basically combined the designs. So they used some Ralph McQuarrie concept art, some microscopic images of tardigrades, and the makeup of sandworm from the 1984 Dune movie to design this thing. I think it's an okay design. I like the idea that the eyes are like the tip of the iceberg sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what you notice, and it's like a periscope for this gigantic thing underground. I actually think it looks a lot like a trimmer, but less like less as long as a trimmer, but the face looks a lot like it, but they don't mention Trimmer being an inspiration. All right, any other comments about Forces of Destiny?
No, I'm just looking at some of this stuff, like the toy line. It's just like,
they made toys?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, was that the Barbie doll stuff?
Yeah, it was very Barbie doll-esque. Yeah. It's like I want girls to feel empowered to do cool stuff and whatnot, but this is just kind of like, oh, the Chewbacca looks bad. But this, he looks like a Sasquatch. He looks like Harry from the Harry and the Hendersons. It seems just a tad bit pandering, I guess. But I guess when you're making kind of like Barbie doll-esque characters, there's only so much you can do. Yeah.
It's tough. I mean, you have a daughter, and so obviously you want her to have all the opportunities that your sons have and my sons have, but I don't have a daughter, and I don't know the pressures or what's culturally relevant for little girls right now. You think we can probably do better than Barbies?
Yeah.
And we're coming off the heels of a Barbie movie, but yeah, that movie's actually quite a feminist tome, strangely.
Yeah, oh look, it's Leia, but she has a new hat.
She's got a new hat.
I'm going to send you this link of Leia and Wicket. It, it looks like he's holding some sort of sex toy.
Wonderful. It's flared at the base. Shit. Oh. God damn it.
All right, should we move on?
Yeah, please.
All right.
This section might not last very long.
Hold on.
Come on in, you guys.
I'm playing the Bad Batch drop.
Okay.
All right. We have a couple of Bad Batch episodes left. Today we're covering Season 3, Episode 13, Into the Breach. Its original air date was April 17th, 2024, or about 2 weeks ago. We got a new cast member today, though. And so I haven't done one of these in a while because we've had a pretty static cast. But today we have a new player named Jeff Boehm. B-O-E-H-M. Sorry if I mispronounced that. He plays a stormtrooper today and a character called Novitz. Novitz is one of the Imperial officers on the science vessel headed to Tantus. We'll get to what's going on there in the plot. But he appears only in this episode, the next episode, and the final episode. That's his only Star Wars credits. This is his first Star Wars character. He doesn't have a huge resume, but he appears in a lot of other TV shows as sort of supporting cast characters, and a lot of them are cop shows. I put cop shows in quotes because they're like not cop shows, they're like NCIS and Criminal Minds, shows like that, or like special unit cop shows, you know what I mean?
Yeah, where they can where they order the cops around and evidence gets analyzed like right away, not like lost in a drawer for like years. Until they're forced to find it through a subpoena,
yeah, or exactly.
Court order,
exactly. So Jeff's acting credits sort of start in 2009, where he appears in the movie Angels and Demons, which is an adaptation of one of Dan Brown's novels. And these movies all starred Tom Hanks as the main protagonist. Did you read any of these books or watch any of these movies?
No.
Okay. Well, I read the books because I read a shit ton of stuff, and when something gets super popular, I'm like, fine, I'll read it. This is, I don't know how to put it. It's like religious science fiction, where it's like, oh, like we're looking for the Ark of the Covenant, and the Ark of the Covenant is actually like the descendants of Jesus Christ. It's not like some cup. It's like all this weird, like fake semiology, like study of symbols and ancient languages and things, and everything's like a Catholic conspiracy, and the Pope is like an expert in particle physics in one of the movies, and wants to prevent them from finding the God particle because it thinks it's blasphemous and blah 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 blah. It's like it stretches like what is reasonably scientific and what's reasonably archaeological to the extreme and turns it into like a murder mystery. I understand why they're popular, because it's like crack for the brain. Just easy to produce thrillers.
Yeah. I had a roommate when I was finishing up college. I don't think you ever met him because you were living in Florida at the time doing your graduate degree. But like, I was living in Scottsdale, renting out a room along with another friend with a guy that he worked with, and this guy was like big into conspiracies and stuff like ancient aliens and shit like this, and stuff with like the Masons and whatnot. And it was just kind of like, yeah, okay, all right, sure, yeah.
This guy's probably lucky I never met him.
And it's funny that I actually read something. It never occurred to me that this whole like ancient aliens thing, like a lot of the ancient aliens thing, if you really think about it, it's kind of racist because like
super racist.
Because like, oh, they're too stupid to actually have figured out how to build such humongous structures. They must have had help.
Yeah, I mean, this is a total aside, but the premise of all of that stuff is incredibly like Eurocentric bias, where it's like, how in the world could these Central Americans learn how to build a pyramid? And be like, you learned how to build a pyramid, you stupid shit, right? You don't think humans with thousands of years could figure out how to cut stones? Like, are you kidding me? It's like the whole premise is completely like a European racist attitude. It's like, oh, we don't have technology to build that now, therefore it never existed. Like, what are you trying to say? Yeah. There are probably cave people that could build better spears than anybody alive. Why? Mm-hmm. Because they spent hundreds of years perfecting the science of working with wood, and we don't have any of their shit because it was made out of wood and it all rotted. They spent hundreds, if not thousands of years perfecting that technology. Like, I'm more inclined to think that that the Babylonians had working motors that were like magnetically driven than an alien helped them build the Hanging Tower, like the Hanging Gardens.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, are you fucking kidding me? Humans are brilliant and resourceful beings, and they've always been that way.
Yeah.
They, like, just, like, our level of technology is, I'm willing to believe that we are at the peak of our level of technology, but it doesn't mean that previous civilizations needed divine intervention to grow crops.
Yeah.
That is fucking racist.
Yeah, and with the huge, like, megastructures, like, all you needed is just time to figure this stuff out and the willingness to exploit people to build said projects, which pretty much has always been the way it is, even now, except we don't call it slavery. We just have just the lower classes to build our shit for us.
I mean, we can definitely imagine a future scenario or future civilization looking back at our civilization saying, like, there's no way that they could have built football stadiums.
Yeah.
Can you imagine how much concrete they would have had to make to build a football stadium? They built dozens of them. Are you kidding me? Like, these would have had to have been built by an extraterrestrial intelligence. Look at the pattern of the football stadiums on the planet. It forms this perfect shape. It's all retrodictive thinking. And everything, like, any, this reasoning has it's a logical fallacy called post hoc ergo proctor hoc. It is, it you're basing your you start with your conclusion and work backward. You just look for anomalies that you can't explain. It's also an argument from personal incredulity, where you just can't explain something and therefore aliens. It's absolutely absurd. Humans are fucking smart. An ancient Egyptian, quote unquote, ancient Egyptian was fucking smart. Also, people don't realize like the time scale we're talking about. By the time Cleopatra was in charge of Egypt, it's written history at this point, well-established written history, that the pyramids were already like thousands of years old. They were already a tourist attraction. Most of their economy was based on people going to Egypt to see the pyramids. It was already ancient history to them. And so you're right. All you need is time and labor to build them. And guess what? They had thousands of years and millions of slaves. Guess how they got built? It wasn't fucking aliens. Yeah. Occam's razor. The explanation that requires the least number of assumptions is often true. All I need are slaves and time. What you need is an intelligent alien race that visits the planet and built a pyramid for some reason. This isn't fucking Stargate. They didn't do it that way, okay? Mm-hmm. That's fiction, and it is racist. Sorry, I got off my soapbox. I fucking hate that theory. This is why this guy was lucky he never met me.
Yeah, he also talked about how like great the 70s were, because you'd just go to parties, get into fights, and just like there'd be just like a big bowl of pills you could just take. Yeah, so,
all right, I'm moving on.
Okay.
So I was talking about the movie Angels and Demons. That movie also has Ewan McGregor and Stellan Skarsgård in it. So there's a Star Wars connection for you. Jeff played a bit part again. He played a Swiss guard, the guard that guards the Pope in that movie. I did, trying to do a deep dive on Jeff tonight, since he's the only new cast member, he did a four-part web show called Seeing Butter in 2010, where a cat from his past torments him. Only the main character, played by Jeff, can see the cat, his girlfriend cannot, and he believes it was sent by his dead father to torment him. It is very much like the cat is talking to me and only I can see the cat sort of thing. It's a very low budget thing, and I think we should have him on the show to ask him what the fuck he was thinking.
Yeah.
I made this thing. I watched all 15 minutes of it.
Did the cat tell him to shoot girls?
Yeah.
Pretty girls?
Yeah, I had a, was that Berkowitz or?
Son of Sam.
Son of Sam, yeah. Yeah, I had that thought too. But, all right. We are way off topic. I'm going to check the record time. Yeah, we got to get going.
Yeah, it was all right. So the Bad Batch did some shit. All right, the end.
All right. Show opens up on Tantus in the vault. A scientist and a medical droid wake up the children. Omega's in her bunk. She surveys the area. Omega introduces herself to Eva, the red-skinned Itachi child we met in last episode. Omega sees the doll that Emery had given her and comments on it. Eva said that Dr. Carr gave it to him. She's the only nice one. The other kids come up, the Pantoran girl and the Jolly Green Giant little kid. What's that guy's name? Sprout?
I can't.
The little Jolly Green Giant? I think his name is Sprout. In the show, his name is Jax or something. I gotta look it up now.
Oh, I don't know the. I don't keep track of my commercial.
Well, what good are you?
It's, I mean,
Jax.
If it was
Jax.
If it was an emu, I could be like, yeah, that's Lemu.
There you go. the other kids come up and the introductions are made. Omega asks how long they've been there. Kids say they aren't really supposed to talk to each other. And if they break the rules, things will go poorly for them. And they all just sort of mill about. We cut to a planet, Borovia. Hunter, Wrecker, and Crosshair with Rampart are waiting for a shuttle. Echo shows up saying he stole a shuttle for them. Echo asks if they can trust Hemlock. Hunter says no. They board the shuttle. The Bad Batch interrogate Rampart, and he tells them that the only way to get the coordinates to Tantus is to board a station and orbit around Coruscant. The hyperspace route is loaded onto each ship individually. So this is the MacGuffin. They have to break onto a base and steal these route instructions, because Rampart is finally coming clean and saying he doesn't actually know how to get to Tantus. Did you recognize this planet?
Yeah, it's the one from where Emery goes to pick up the kid.
What kid?
Oh, you said the planet.
Yeah, the planet Polvio.
Oh, no.
This is the planet where Cad Bane in season one tries to kidnap Omega.
Okay.
And this is a return to that planet. Familiar set. All right. So Hunter says that they need to get on the station and find a ship going to Tantus. They need to grab the route from the navicomputer. Rampart says that there's no way to get on the station without being detected. They would need clearance codes. Echo says he has the codes, but the plan is for Rampart to wear an Imperial uniform to get them on the station. Rampart hates this plan, but they jump into hyperspace. This episode is basically Rampart saying, no, I don't want to do it, and then doing it.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so we're going to jump in between what the Bad Batch are doing to get these coordinates and what's going on Tantus. So back on Tantus, Emery is drawing a sample from Omega. Omega asks her about the other kids. Emery claims that they are well looked after. Omega is skeptical. Omega is unsure if she can trust Emery. Emery puts the blood sample into a pneumatic tube system. While she does this, Omega steals a small metal tool, shoves it in her sleeve. As Emery returns to the observation deck, Dr. Scalder says that Dr. Carr is too friendly with the subjects. She complains that they have toys and things to do. Dr. Carr pulls rank on Dr. Scalder and kicks her in the nuts pretty hard and says that she will run the vault if she sees fit. The toys are to keep their minds occupied. Dr. Scalder is like the mustache-twirling villain.
Mm-hmm.
Any thoughts about this section of the show?
No.
I'm going a little fast. I just want to...
No. It's okay. No, it's okay. Yeah. They needed... I guess Emery needs kind of a... like some sort of foil. Like someone who's shitty, but who's not Hemlock.
Yeah, exactly. This is someone on her level, or mm-hmm. or closer to her level that she can dunk on. And spoiler alert: Scalder gets some comeuppance soon. Omega asks how often the droids take their vitals. Omega's talking to the kids. The kids say twice a day. She asks about troopers. They tell her that they don't go in the vault unless there's a problem. Jax once tried to escape. Omega says that she's escaped from Tantus once before and tells them that she will escape again and take them with her. She makes a map of the vault with the toys on the table. Omega shows them the tool she stole. Jack says it won't take long for them to notice that she's missing. Omega says that's fine. She likes a challenge. We've talked about it before, but this is very much like a kid empowerment moment.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, here come the bad news bears. Here comes like the kids that are going to rescue E.T.,
yeah.
From NASA.
Yeah. This and then the upcoming videos, I didn't mind. Usually I just can't stand this sort of stuff. But I didn't mind it. They played it. It was played well. Because they weren't like somehow like the adults weren't bumbling, you know, dipshits. The kids were very much kids. But if anything, it's like Omega. It's just like Omega is the one who's in charge, and they're just kind of following along.
Yeah. They're not overly confident. They're insecure. They're unsure of what to do or of how to proceed, and they're gathering inspiration from Omega. It's a very believable timbre for sort of abused children,
mm-hmm. right?
All right. On the stolen shuttle, Rampart is changed into his captain's uniform. The Bad Batch is worried about the mission. The shuttle approaches the station and transmits landing codes. They are clear to land. Tech says they can't stay long. The shuttle will be reported as missing eventually. I want to stop here because I think I hate Rampart as a character, like in-universe character. I love Rampart in this moment when he gets his captain's uniform because he thinks that they've given him too low of a rank.
Yeah.
This guy was sprung from prison. And he is an involuntary participant in the subterfuge against the Empire, and he's complaining about his fucking rank. I love this moment.
Yeah, it just goes to show he's just a fucking tool. He cares more about appearance than anything else.
it's that bullshit big dick energy, you know? Like, the second he's back on base, he immediately starts pushing people around. Anyone that has a lower rank than his fictional rank, he abuses. It's perfect. It just shows, like, what a shitty person he is.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, how he rose the ranks. He just rose the ranks by, like, stabbing everybody in the back. It is wonderful. And he's just, like, right back in the mix. I love it.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Rampart asks, what will happen to the Bad Batch or killed on the mission? They agree to work together to get out alive. There's a lot of, I don't know how to call it, like, a lot of, like, pregnant suspense here. It's like, will Rampart just, like, turn on them? But he's also a fugitive, and so it doesn't make sense that he would do that. They keep implying that he's going to.
Mm-hmm.
Rampart says that he will be fine. Bad Batch will stick out more than a random captain will. Hunter reminds Rampart that the Empire betrayed and imprisoned him. Hunter says to remember that before he sells them out.
Yeah.
Did you notice the changes to their uniform?
It was just like they just painted it all black.
Yeah, so they basically dressed themselves up like Death Troopers.
Mm-hmm.
To make themselves less noticeable, but they intentionally de-emphasized any color on their uniform. They still get, I don't know if I skipped it in the notes or if I just left it out, they still get, it's the next paragraph, sorry. An Imperial approaches them and says the shuttle isn't on the manifest for the day. He asks about their uniforms, saying they're not regulation. He demands to know what unit they are with. Rampart says they're in a classified unit and he's not to interfere with their mission. If he has a problem with that, they can call Tarkin. This is what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
They're immediately noticed. Rampart immediately pulls rank on the guy. That's very good.
Well, yeah, and it shows the kind of structure that the Empire is that you can get, as long as you're confident enough, you can just say, like, this is above your pay grade, fuck off. And then you just throw around somebody's name, and then they're too scared to do anything.
Exactly. He's too afraid of the consequences of what if this is true, and Tarkin does get on the phone.
Yeah, like history has shown, like, these kind of people will just kill people just for no good reason at all, just for, like, questioning the leader, whether it's Stalin or one of the North Korean leaders or Hitler or whoever. It's like they don't want to be questioned. So it's kind of ballsy, but it's just like, oh yeah, if you really want to go talk to this guy, and they know that they'll be too to like call Stalin and be like, hey, these guys said that they were with you, you know, because
you don't know if Stalin would just be like, yeah, they are. Fuck you. Like, you're dead now.
Yeah, even if they weren't.
Right. You never have the ability to check above you.
Mm-hmm.
Because the consequences are too dire.
Yeah.
All right. On the station, they work their way through the corridors. They're trying to get to a control room because they can get to the station manifest there. Rampart talks his way into the control room by ordering around some grunts. This is another great moment where he's just like, do what I say, and they're like, we just got here, we don't know who you are, and he just starts quoting regulations to them until they leave. Inside the control room, Rampart asks for the station manifest. The terminal operator asks for his access card, actual credentials, and the Bad Batch stun them. All right. I should have said that the Bad Batch right now are Rampart, Echo, Hunter, and Crosshair. Wrecker was left with the ship. Because on the ship, the Imperial who confronted them initially returns and asks Wrecker where the captain is. Wrecker fumbles through an excuse, and the Imperial says he needs to see the shuttle's identity marker because there's some inconsistencies. He probably realizes the shuttle's been reported as stolen at this point. Wrecker says okay and leads the Imperial into the ship and immediately knocks him out. He radios Hunter to tell him that he had to put a sleeper hold on this fool, and Hunter says, okay, I guess the clock is running now. In the control room, they locate a shuttle headed to Tantist. Unfortunately, they realize that they can't download the coordinates from the ship's computer because they will receive the coordinates on direct uplink after they launch. So there's additional security that Rampart didn't know about. The Bad Batch find this fact annoying, but I'm sort of on Rampart's side. Everything he said so far is basically true, and there's no way he would know an operational detail like this. Thoughts?
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't really mind. It didn't really stick out to me.
Do you think Rampart's being truthful with them though?
I mean, well, I know now, but it was hard to read everything with Rampart because like it's only a matter of time before he's gonna make his move.
Yeah, I think at the time we were before we saw the last episode, I think we were curious why Rampart was helping them, like what his angle was.
I guess I don't know. It just added to the suspense. Like, is he trying to fuck them over or not? Because he's definitely not the kind of person who would just see the error of his ways and change. He's just gonna like look for his opportunity then to fuck whoever over and take it. So
agreed.
I don't know if it's important whether they believed him or not. It's more just that that tension of like, is he telling the truth? Man, I don't know. Is this gonna be the moment where he decides just to like, he's gonna be like, hey, I'm Admiral Rampart. These guys are blah blah blah. I try to somehow win favor, but I think he was telling the truth. If push comes to shove, I probably would guess he's telling the truth because he would need some sort of big leverage to fuck them over and not get either shot or thrown back in prison.
Right.
And this isn't it.
Yeah. Yeah, good analysis. I agree. I was very confused by his character and what he was doing, and I was at this point, like, divorcing myself from what we learn later, I think he's being relatively truthful with them. And it's a surprise, at least to me. All right, so the plan has to change. They need to get on that shuttle before it leaves for Tantus. Echo says that he will get to the shuttle. Once on board, he will disable the proximity sensors, and the Bad Batch will physically attach to the ship before it jumps into hyperspace. Rampart is furious that this is the new plan. He is quickly overruled. He has no bargaining here. Mm-hmm. But Rampart, this is the other thing about Rampart, is he definitely is acting like he's in charge. He's constantly giving feedback to them.
Yeah.
And they're just ignoring him. Mm-hmm. They have to go radio silent from here on out. Echo splits off from the rest to go board the shuttle to Tantist. Rampart is convinced that they're all going to die in this plan. We hop back to Tantist in the vault. The medical droid is taking vitals of the kids. It leaves, and Omega goes to her room. Dr. Scalder sees Omega go into her room and starts to walk down to the vault. Omega uses the tool she stole to remove a few wall panels from her room. Once a couple comes out, several fall down. Dr. Scalder enters the vault and walks to Omega's room. Omega greets her. Scalder inspects the room, and it appears normal. Omega asks if there's something wrong. Dr. Scalder is suspicious, but leaves the room and goes back to the observation deck. This is a very, I don't want to say strange, this is a very simple sequence where Omega's, she basically gets one of these tiles, her room is built of like these tiles, and she gets one of the tiles out and a bunch fall down. Makes me sort of wonder what's holding this thing together from like a building point of view. But she sees like the pneumatic tube system and where it goes.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a very, very mechanical moment for Omega to sort of understand what she can get away with. The other kids ask Omega if it worked. Omega confirms and says she knows how to escape now. Back on the base, Echo is sneaking around in a hangar trying to get near the shuttle. He sees a chute loading some astromech droids into the ship. Echo hides on top of a pile of crates to get closer to the droid chute. The ship is heavily guarded by Scorch and his commando crew. Echo gets the droid chute, and on board, the commandos miss him, and the ship starts to launch. The ship is leaving right now. Hunter and Rampart and Crosshair get back to their shuttle, where Wrecker is with the unconscious Imperial. Echo tells Hunter that the ship is leaving now, breaking radio silence for some reason. Hunter launches as quickly as he can. Any comment on this section?
I liked how Echo is just, I'm trying to think of the best way to explain it, that he's very covert and he's covert yet confident. I kind of liked how he was just like weaving his way through, because I would just be like, I was stuck behind. I would be stuck behind something and too afraid to move.
Yeah, this is a lot of character growth from Echo. I don't think we've ever discussed this on in a Bad Batch episode, but Echo is called Echo because in the Domino Squadron episode where they're in the Gladiator Arena, he just repeats orders, and so he's definitely rigid. He starts out very rigid, following orders to the point where he echoes the order to the rest of the team to make sure they're following the order. And this Echo is highly improvisational, right? He is able to adapt and move and get the job done no matter what. It's like he understands the mission better than he understands the orders. I like this Echo. I think he's doing great.
Yeah, me too.
All right. On the science vessel, Echo is trying to disable the proximity sensor. He has that hand. He's got that droid hand. He sticks it into one of those ports that we see R2 messing with in, like, Empire. When he does this, he trips some sort of alarm. The captain is alerted that there's unauthorized droid activity in the cargo bay, and the captain orders someone to go check on it. A trooper shows up in the cargo bay and Echo stuns him. The trooper drops his gear and Echo sees the communicator. The captain is calling for an update and Echo picks up the communicator and says, they had a weapons malfunction. All is fine here. How are you?
Yeah.
Still one of the funniest fucking lines in cinema.
Yeah.
So he says everything is fine, there's a malfunction, false alarm. Echo goes back to the terminal and starts sticking with it some more. On the Bad Batch's shuttle, Hunter is keeping his distance, but they've launched. He knows the proximity sensor is still up and running. Rampart says Echo has failed, he's probably dead or captured. They need to abort the mission, once again Rampart pretending like he's in charge. Hunter says they aren't going to do that, and he fires up the engine, headed straight for the science vessel. The Bad Batch are picking up an energy surge aboard the science vessel, assuming that it's about to jump into hyperspace. Echo is working on the sensor. As the science ship powers up to jump, Hunter attaches the shuttle to the underside of the ship. The combined ship jumps into hyperspace.
Yeah, I love this scene because I love the way they're just like, Rampart's just like, oh, it's going to fail. And just the way they drew Hunter was just like grim determination. It was just like, no, we're not failing. We're going.
Yeah, it's a wonderful moment because it's an absolute like all or nothing moment for them. Where grim determination is the perfect description, because Hunter is like we will either do this or die, but there's no third option. Right? Echo's on the ship. Echo's going to deliver. I think even Crosser at one point says, like, Echo will get it done.
Yeah, right? Echo will have that proximity sensor down. We just got to give him more time.
There it is. There it is.
You know, let's just
quote all of the movies tonight.
Well, because it's the thing the Empire didn't have. Especially like the Emperor's trust in your comrades and your friends to get it done.
Yeah, your faith in your friends is your weakness.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's fucking perfect. All right. That's the end of the episode. Let's get into it. Did you like it?
Yeah, I did. I thought it was a great episode. Not a whole lot of action, but just the covert nature. Just the very end, which is kind of gripping, which we just talked about. The stuff with Rampart, like, okay, is he gonna fuck them over now? Okay, how about now? And then just like you said, him just like as soon as he gets back into uniform, he thinks he's. Or even before then, he thinks he's fucking hot shit, that he's just automatically in charge, and they just brush him off.
He's God's gift.
Yeah, I like the fact that they know he's gonna dick them over somehow. They're not stupid, so they're just using him for what they can.
It's the whole thing. It's the second they rescued him or broke him out of prison, he goes for a blaster and Crosshair shoots him, like stuns him, and then they just drag his body around.
Mm-hmm.
Right? He is raw material to them. He has one thing that they can give him, and arguably he's given it to them.
Yeah.
They are on in hyperspace on their way to Tantus. That's all they wanted.
Yeah. Yeah, and then just the Omega stuff on Tantus, I didn't mind. Like I said before, I'm not usually a fan of the kid empowerment stuff, but they played it well to where it wasn't just like where it wasn't just unrealistic BS how the scrappy kids figure out how to beat security systems and like highly trained government operatives.
So the scenes in the vault were inspired by two breakout movies or two like escape movies. Can I tell you what they are?
Sure.
The 1979 Clint Eastwood film Escape from Alcatraz.
Yeah, I was thinking that one.
And the 1992 Steven Seagal movie Under Siege.
Under Siege, really?
I don't know where the Under Siege piece is in this, but I definitely see the Escape from Alcatraz piece.
Was there like a toilet stripper that came out of a cake that we didn't see, and then Steven Seagal acted really badly, I would have thought. Escape from Alcatraz, and I would have thought the Shawshank Redemption. With how
Shawshank Redemption is what I was an audio drop I was going to use in this episode after watching it again tonight, or The Great Escape, the World War II movie where they dig that huge tunnel.
Yeah,
what, is that Steve McQueen? I think so.
I don't know.
That's even older than the 1979 Clint Eastwood movie Escape from Alcatraz. I'm sorry we've been referencing so many movies from the 70s, everybody. But you're too young.
Yes. Yeah, you're the problem, not us.
Why, there are no children here at the 4-H Club either. Am I so out of touch? No, it's the children who are wrong.
Yeah. So I don't know. I feel like I need to watch Under Siege, except I don't want to do that to myself. But
yeah, it's not a bad movie, but just
it's
knowing
not his
what,
worst movie.
Oh, I mean, knowing what we know now about Steven Seagal, it's hard to watch because he is not a good person.
Yeah, he turned out to be sort of a piece of shit. But all right, I don't have a lot of trivia for this episode. We already talked about the armor being painted down black, and the abandoned Kaminoan facility on Borovio first seen in season one's Bounty Lost, where Tanwi hires Cad Bane to kidnap Omega from the Bad Batch. We've already talked about that in the plot summary. Do you want to go on and do the review? Or do the ranking?
Do the rankings?
Yeah.
Sure.
You go first this week, though.
Oh, okay. Well, okay, so let me...
Unless you really don't want to.
No, it's okay. So let me just explain. So our our ranking system is we rank by characters. So a really great episode would be an original trilogy character, Han, Luke, Leia, Chewie, Vader, etc. A bad episode would be something like... Oh, I just watched... A New Hope, and there was a character I saw... who was just like a random person, like outside the cantina, that was just like, I've never noticed that character before.
I fucking love that. I love it when I watch like one of the original trilogy and I see something I've never seen before. That happened when I watched Return of the Jedi in the theater. I saw someone in Jabba's palace. I'm like, who the fuck is that? I love it.
Yeah. Like a few years ago, I noticed a mistake that they made, and I sent you I told you like there's totally a mistake where you can see like shadows of the film crew on the Millennium Falcon.
Yeah, and you ruined Star Wars for me forever. Yeah. Thank you. You freed me from the curse.
You're still
that old, woman. That old woman touched my face when I was 8 years old and said, "Star Wars." And I was trapped. I was trapped in this life until you pointed out that there was, you could see the shadow of the boom mic and the Millennium Falcon in a scene. You freed me. I've been kissing frogs my entire life, trying to break the curse.
Okay. All right. So, what would I give this one? What's the because of the covert nature of it? I liked it. I think it's as Lenny, the ISB agent who Luthen Rail works with. Is his name Lenny?
His name is Lenny.
Maybe I imagined that.
Does he have a pet mouse in his pocket? Then we gotta look it up.
Lonnie.
So close. Still a silly name, but Andor is perfectly written, so I'll give it a pass.
Yeah.
I'm gonna add his name. I'm gonna add an alias to his name in Wikipedia and say his name is Lenny. Also known as Lenny. Lonnie Young. L-O-N-N-I Young. Like, amazing.
Yeah,
this guy looks like he would stab you in the back.
That's nice. Yeah. He's
I'm talking about sex. I'm talking about, like, he betray you. I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, no. It's just that he is a, he doesn't look, because he says, like, he has a new kid. He has, like, a new baby. Everyone, like, he doesn't want to be part of this anymore. And Luthen's like, yeah, no. You're, I can't let you go. And then
my wife is pregnant. That actually makes you more vulnerable to me. So that makes you more useful, because now I can hold the life of your wife and child over your head.
Yeah, looking in the pictures of him, he's like, in other things, he's not like handsome, like I don't know, like a Brad Pitt type or Diego Luna, but he's not as goofy looking as he is in Andor.
I sort of have him like looking like he has a comb over in Andor.
Yeah.
You know, I'm looking at his page in Wikipedia, and he's part of something called the Axis Network. Have you ever heard of them refer to their rebel network as the Axis Network?
No.
It is like there's a whole article on it. I wonder where this name comes from.
Appearances Andor. Non-canon like appearances. Lego Star Wars, the Skywalker Saga. I mean, let's see, sources. It's a certain point of view, indirect mention, Star Wars, Dawn of the Rebellion, visual guide. First identified as at work. There you go.
Oh, yeah. Dawn of the Rebellion. I don't have that book. That's why I don't know about this. Do I have to get this book? Maybe.
You know you are. There's no maybe about it.
Yeah, I'm going to get it. There's just so many. You know how many fucking Star Wars books there are? I won an auction at that stupid party that I went to on the last night, and it was for Star Wars books. Because Chrissy thought it would be, she knows I collect the books and things.
Mm-hmm.
And it was for a gift certificate to the local bookstore and a couple Star Wars novels. And they're repeats. I own them. And so I'll try to give them away on Twitter mm-hmm. to people who listen to the show or follow us on Twitter. But yeah, like I have got too many Star Wars books, too many books in general, but because I love books, but I've got a shit ton of Star Wars books, and I do not have this one. Oh, cool. Now we learned something new. All right. So you're giving the show a Lonnie?
Yes.
Awesome. All right. So it's my turn to rank.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So I'm going to give this episode a Rako Hardeen.
Oh, that's the Obi-Wan's undercover.
Yep. Your choice influenced my choice. Which is why I wanted to go first this week. And you mentioned clandestine stuff, and I was like, Rako Hardeen, as you just said, is the identity Obi-Wan assumes when he has to fake his own death to get inside, what's his name, Moral Eval's group of bounty hunters who are going to try to assassinate Palpatine or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Wonderful, wonderful Clone Wars arc. I'm actually really excited we're getting back to Clone Wars in a few weeks. Yeah, I'm going to give it to Rico Hardeen. A great character, a wonderful plot line, very exciting, and another undercover piece, just like we have here with Rampart.
Mm-hmm.
All right, is there anything else we want to talk about before we close up shop tonight?
No, I think that's it.
Yep, so next week we will continue our Bad Batch coverage with a review of Flash Strike, which is the second to last episode of Bad Batch ever. So stick with us there. Other than that, I guess we're done for the week.
Okay. Yep. Be sure to reach out, tell a friend about us, help our numbers grow, and get us some lucrative advertising deals, or not, or just tell somebody you really dislike about us to waste some of their time.
Thank you for downloading and listening to this episode. We would also like to thank Jordan White for the use of his cover of Yub Nub as our intro and outro music. Please refer to the show notes for photos, clips, and links from this episode. Side effects from listening to Yubcast may include dizziness, dry mouth, a sense of confusion, and decreased sex drive. Serious side effects may include speaking in Ewok, speculating the origins of prequel characters, and wondering why two grown men discuss children's cartoons on the internet. For a complete list of side effects or to complain about the show, please visit us on Twitter at YubCast or drop us an email at NoochVaderProductions@gmail.com. Thanks again. We will see you again next week with a new episode. YubCast is not affiliated with Lucasfilm or the Walt Disney Company. Star Wars, its characters, and creations are the property of Lucasfilm and its parent company, the Walt Disney Company. YubCast is intended for entertainment and informational purposes only. Da 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 da